The next chapter is called The Elf Boy. "I'm just lost in the forest," Nicholas stammered. "I'm not causing any trouble." "Hey," shouted the man. "I asked you who you are. It's the middle of the night. You're up to something. Tell me or I'll put an arrow through you." Nicholas heard some of the other men waking up, talking confused. "I'm Nicholas. I'm just a boy. A boy wandering in the forest in the middle of the night." "Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no," said little Kip. Or maybe it was, "Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no." But anyway, to all human ears except Nicholas, it just sounded like, "Keep up, keep up, keep up." Then some footsteps and a familiar voice. "I know who it is," said Anders, as he loomed over Nicholas. "He's Joel's son. Put the crossbow down, Tovo. He isn't here for trouble. That's right, isn't it, boy?" More shadows. The other men, five of them, were walking towards him. His father spoke up. "Nicholas, is that you?" he asked, total disbelief. Nicholas looked into his father's face and felt scared. Maybe it's because he had grown a beard, or maybe it was something else. The eyes, those familiar eyes, now seemed dark and distant, like those of a stranger. Nicholas was so overwhelmed he could hardly speak. "Papa, yes, it's me." Joel ran over and threw his arms around his son. He hugged Nicholas till he thought his ribs would break. Nicholas hugged him back, trying to believe he was still the good father he had always imagined him to be. He felt his father's beard prickle his cheek. It felt lovely, comforting. "What are you doing here?" Nicholas sensed quite urgency in his father's question. He didn't know what to say, but he decided to do what his mother had taught him to do when he was in trouble. He took a deep breath and told the truth. "I wasn't getting on with Aunt Carlotta, so I went to look for you. And so I headed to the far north and found Elfhelm, and then the elves put me in prison." His father's face softened and his eyes crinkled, and he seemed familiar again. "Oh, Nicholas, my poor boy, what happened?" "They locked me in the tower because they don't trust humans." Nicholas looked at the elf shackled to the cage by his wrists and ankles, and then behind him at the six other men who were standing in the moonlight. Nicholas desperately wanted him to tell them to go away. He wanted to believe in his father and continued to hope that this was all a mix-up, a misunderstanding. "Well, son," his father said, drawing himself up to his full height and looking very solemn. "I have to say, those stories I told you about how happy and kind the elves were just that, stories. I discovered the elves aren't who we thought they would be." Nicholas looked at little Kip, who was staring at him, beseechingly from his cage. The elf was too scared to speak, and Nicholas couldn't help but feel betrayed, as if everything he had known was a lie. "You didn't tell me you were going to kidnap an elf. You said you were going to find proof of Elfhelm." "Yes," said his father, seemingly eager and sincere. "And what could be better proof than a real-life elf?" "But you lied to me." "I didn't lie. I didn't quite know what kind of proof we would find. I just didn't tell you the whole truth." Nicholas looked at the large, menacing gang of men in the dark and silent forest. "Did they make you do it, Papa?" Anders laughed and the others followed, sending a clatter of voices through the forest. Joel winced. "No, no one made me do it." "Tell him, Joel," said Anders. "Why don't you tell him what really happened?" Joel nodded nervously, looking at his son, and swallowed. "Well, Nicholas, in fact, it was my idea. When Anders came to me that night, I suggested it. I said the best evidence would be if we got a real-life elf and took it to the king." Nicholas couldn't believe what he was hearing. The words stung him like vinegar in a cut. His own father, a kidnapper. Most people grow up gradually over many years, but standing there in the forest, Nicholas lost his childhood in a second. Nothing makes you grow up quicker than discovering your father is not the man you think he is. "How could you do that?" His father sighed. It was a long sigh. "It's a lot of money, Nicholas. 3,000 rubles. That could buy us a cow or a pig. We'll be able to have a very good Christmas next year, the kind of Christmas me and Carlotta never knew. I'll be able to buy you toys. Or a toilet, said R2 from somewhere behind his beard. Joel ignored his dim-witted friend and carried on. I'll be able to buy a horse and a new cart, and we'll ride into town, and people will look at us and admire us and be jealous of how much money we have. Anger bubbled inside Nicholas. Why? I don't want people to be jealous. I want people to be happy. Joel looked back at the other men, who were clearly entertained by this conversation. He frowned with frustration and turned back to Nicholas. Well, you need to learn about the world, my son. You're a child, and I'm not, and I know about the world. It's a selfish place. No one will ever look after you. You have to look after yourself, and that's what I'm doing, all right? No one was ever kind to me. No one ever gave me presents. I used to cry every Christmas day because I never got a single thing. Other children had at least one little present from their parents, but me and Carlotta, we had nothing. But next birthday, next Christmas, I can buy you anything you want. Nicholas looked again at the cage and the ropes. I was happy with the sleigh. I was happy with you and Mika. I was even happy with the turnip doll. Next Christmas, you'll thank me. Not this one, it's too late for that, but next one, you'll see, I promise. No, said Nicholas, just saying the word felt like turning a key inside his mind, locking out any weakness. What are you talking about? Nicholas took a deep breath, as if inhaling courage. No, I'm going to take little Kickback's Elfhelm back to his home. The men laughed. The sound clattered through Nicholas, making him feel scared and angry at the same time. One of them, a gruff-voiced man with a coat made of reindeer skin, snarled. No, you're not. Tell him, Tovia. Tovia raised his crossbow again and spat on the ground. Joel turned to see the weapon. I'm sorry, Nicholas, but you're not taking him back. There's too much at stake. If you love me more than you love money, then you would do it. Papa, please. Toys are great, but being good is better than being rich. You can never be happy as a kidnapper. I've never been happy as a woodcutter either, said Joel. His face screwed up as if he was in pain. Now, if all goes according to plan, I'll have a chance to find out what life has to offer. Nicholas shook his head. He began to cry. He couldn't help it. There was too much inside him. Anger, fear, disappointment. He loved his father, and yet this man who he loved had stolen an elf boy from his home and put him in a cage. Nicholas wiped his eyes with the back of his hand. He thought of Father Topo's words to little Noosh. We must never let fear be our guide. Let's take the elf back, said Nicholas in a louder voice, looking around at all of the men. The elves would be happy. They might even give us a reward. We must take little Kip back to his family. They'd kill us, said Anders with confidence. Anders had his bow and grey-feathered arrows slung on his back. Listen, boy, why don't you come with us? It could be an adventure. You'll get to meet the king. No way. He'll ruin everything, said the gruff-voiced man with the reindeer coat. Silence, Thomas, said Anders. This is Joel's son. Come on, boy, what do you say? For a brief moment, Nicholas thought how it would be to go to the royal palace and meet the king. He pictured his face from the back of a coin and the cuddly toy he had always seen in the toy shop window, with his large nose and big chin and splendid crown and clothes. Everything would be made of gold. Maybe his whole palace was made of gold. It would have been wonderful to go there, but nothing was as wonderful as doing the right thing. Come with us, son, said Joel softly now. Don't be silly. Anders is right. It will be an adventure, a Christmas adventure. Anders could teach you how to shoot the bow and arrow. Wouldn't that be fun? Yes, said Anders. You could help me shoot a deer. And then you could cook it on the fire. We've been eating fresh meat every night. You look as though you could do with a good meal. And there's no better meal than one you shoot yourself. One day I even shot a reindeer, but it got away before I had time to kill it. Disappeared into the woods. Nicholas thought of the grey-feathered arrow sticking out of Blitzen's leg. He knew that long before Blitzen would be coming to look for him. Oh, sorry, he knew that before long Blitzen would be coming to look for him. And then these big tall men would probably try to kill him again and turn him into reindeer stew. He looked into little Kip's large, strange eyes, which were filled with fear. Little Kip still hadn't said a word, and in that moment, for the first time in his life, Nicholas hated his father. He turned to all the other men standing there in the frosty forest, solid shadows in the blue black of night. Kidnappers. Reindeer killers. He was scared, but he was also determined. "It's all right, little Kip. I'm going to get you out of here and take you home." Blitzen's revenge. "Control your boy," one of the men shouted. Nicholas ignored him. He was concentrating hard on the metal chains that kept little Kip shackled to the cage on the sleigh. He felt his father's hand grab his arm and tried to pull him away. "Come on, Nicholas, you're embarrassing us both now." "Put him in the cage too," suggested Tovia. "We can't put a boy in a cage," said Anders. "You already have," said Nicholas, "or don't elves count?" "No, son," said Joel, "of course they don't count. They're elves. The elves were quite happy to put you in prison, remember?" Nicholas thought about Father Vidal, remembered the fury in his voice and how frightened he had felt. "Yes, but..." "But what?" For a moment, Nicholas wondered what he was doing. Why did he care? Then he looked inside the cage. Little Kip was fretting, his face twitching all over. "You're an elf," whispered Nicholas urgently. "You've got magic in you. Use your powers." Little Kip began to cry again. "I can't. It's impossible." "You can't say that word. You're too young to swear." Little Kip looked up at him, tilting his head to one side. Nicholas knew that he was asking a lot of a young elf. Little Kip was, well, little. It was hard to work out elf ages, but he couldn't have been more than 5 years old. Maybe his magic hadn't developed yet. And even if it had, then Nicholas knew it wasn't that easy without the confidence of a single clear wish. Magic was useless by itself. Making impossibilities possibilities was harder than it looked. The elf closed his eyes, straining, and the men started to jeer. "It's Christmas Eve," urged Nicholas. "Can you feel it? There's magic in the air. Come on, little Kip. Use your Drimwick powers. You can do it." "No," came a tiny voice. "I can't." "You can. I know you can. You're an elf. You can do it." Little Kip frowned hard. "Come away, Nicholas. I mean it," said Joel, grabbing Nicholas's hand. There was a strange tinkling sound. The little elf was changing colour with the effort, his face becoming as purple as a plum, and then clank. Nicholas saw one of the iron chains between the elf's handcuffs snap like toffee. Then another, and another. There was only one more. "That's it, little Kip, you're doing it. Look, he's escaping." "Stop your sorcery, you pointy-eared little freak," Tovia spat at the elf, "or I'll shoot you dead." He raised his crossbow and pointed it at little Kip. "I will not," said the elf, which to the men sounded like, "Kalabash aminu." "And stop your gobbledygook," added Tovia. Somewhere above, a bird flapped away from a tree. "A dead elf's no good to us," said Joel. "A dead elf is better than an escaped elf," Tovia spat. "If it makes another move, I'll shoot it." Nicholas pulled his hand away fast from his father's grip. He had never felt less like his father's son. He darted to the front of the cage and he could hardly control his breathing. The fear was intense. He looked up at Tovia in his dark, desperate eyes, which seemed to contain the night. "Well, I'm not going to let you." "Don't tempt me, little boy. I could kill you too." His voice didn't falter. Thomas gasped. "Look!" Nicholas turned and saw a whirl of snow and hooves and hot breath. The forest was rumbling, as though filled with thunder. It was a huge reindeer pounding towards them. "Blitzen!" called Nicholas, fearing for the creature's life. "Leave him to me!" shouted Anders. He fired an arrow and it whistled through the air, fast and straight. Blitzen kept galloping even faster, seemingly towards the arrow. But at the last minute he lifted his head up and his whole body with it, and it left the ground at a steep angle, climbing through the air as if on an invisible hill, brushing past snow-covered pine branches as he rose. Nicholas watched Anders' bow and arrow aim higher as the reindeer pawed the sky, antlers silhouetted against the moon. "Don't shoot him, please! He's my only friend," pleaded Nicholas. Joel looked at his son's white, thin face. Then he looked at his own left hand, at his half finger. "Life is pain," he said sadly. "But it's also magic, Papa." Joel ignored him. "You need to calm him down, Nicholas. He'll be safer if you call him back where we can see him. We won't shoot him, will we, men? We'll capture him and take him to the king. Sure, he'd like to see a flying reindeer." Anders lowered his arrows. "Yes, call him down." "Blitzen," called Nicholas, wondering if any of them could be truly trusted. "Come down from the sky, it's safer." The reindeer seemed to understand, because a minute later he had landed in the little clearing, chest heaving and eyes shining with exertion. "This is Blitzen. Please don't hurt him," said Nicholas. The reindeer nuzzled his neck. "Lake Blitzen," said Thomas, smoothing the reindeer's coat. Nicholas stroked the creature's neck, and Blitzen stared at Anders, making a noise between a grunt and a growl. "It's all right, Blitzen. He's not going to hurt you again," said Nicholas, wishing he could truly believe what he was saying. But even as he was saying it, Tovia was raising his crossbow. "No!" cried Joel. Nicholas tried to think, looking around him, as if the answer could be found somewhere in the scary darkness of the forest. There was only one thing to do. "Okay, we'll come with you on the adventure. I would love to meet the king." "He's lying," said Tovia. Joel looked into his son's eyes, and in that instant, Nicholas knew that he understood, as perhaps only a father can. "No, he's not. You aren't, are you, Nicholas? Because if you are lying, you will be killed, and there will be nothing I can do about it." "No, Papa," Nicholas took a deep breath. "I'm not lying. I've changed my mind. I was being stupid. The elves locked me in the prison with a murderous troll. I don't owe them anything." There were a few moments when no one spoke, and the only sound was the cold wind whispering through the trees. Then Anders thumped Nicholas on the shoulder. "Good boy, you've done the right thing, hasn't he, Joel?" "Yes," said Joel. "He always does." "Well, good, that's settled. We better get some rest now," said Anders. "Big day tomorrow." He put his arms around Thomas and Tovia. "The boy and the reindeer must sleep away from the elf creature just to be safe," said Thomas. "I'm fine with that," said Nicholas. Joel wasn't entirely happy. "But wait, what about the elf? What if he uses his magic? One of us needs to stay on guard to make sure he doesn't escape." "Good point," said Tovia, rubbing his eyes. "I'll do it." "Tovia, you're too tired," said Anders. "You drunk too much cloudberry wine, as always. We need someone else." "I feel wide awake," said Joel. "I'll do it. It's my son who's been causing trouble. I feel I'm to blame." "All right, then. That makes sense. Wake me at first light and I'll take over." Anders pointed to the pines on the other side of the campfire, beyond the clearing towards the ravine. "You can sleep over there." He patted Blitzen on the back and smoothed his snow-damp fur. "Sorry, old buddy. No hard feelings about the arrow, eh?" Blitzen thought about this, and as he did so, took a wee on Anders' long johns. "Hey!" cried Anders, and Thomas burst into laughter. Anders couldn't help laughing too, which caused the other men to join in. And so it was then that the men all went back to sleep by the still glowing campfire, and Nicholas and Blitzen lay down amid the trees beyond them, and Joel stayed sitting in front of the cage containing little Kip. Whether little Kip had given up on his chances of escape, it was hard to tell, but Nicholas certainly hadn't stopped dreaming of helping the boy. He lay snuggled into Blitzen, their bodies warming each other, as the voices of the men became silent. "Happy Christmas, Blitzen," he said glumly, but the reindeer was already asleep. Something good. Nicholas lay awake, staring up at the full moon for a long time. As he was drifting off to sleep, he heard a noise. No more than a whisper, lost in the wind, he looked up and saw his father, slowly pushing the sleigh towards him away from the camp. The elf could not have been very heavy because his sleigh was moving easily. Little Kip was inside the cage, silent, wide-eyed, holding onto the bars. "What are you doing?" whispered Nicholas. Joel put a finger to his lips and then took the rope harness he'd been using to pull the sleigh off his shoulders and went over to Blitzen to put it over his head. Nicholas couldn't believe it. "I knew we were going to try and free the elf," said Joel. "Which is really a really terrible idea, by the way. Really, really terrible. But it is Christmas. And your birthday. And you're still my son. And I want you to stay alive. So help me." Nicholas leant towards Blitzen. "Stay calm," he said in a voice so quiet the reindeer might not even have heard him. Blitzen slowly got up and stood stock still as they put the harness over him. The fire had died now and the men were still sleeping in their drunken sleep. Nicholas felt nervous, but also strangely happy and relieved. His father still had goodness in him after all. One of the men, maybe Tovia, though it was too dark and distant to tell, rolled over and grumbled a little. Nicholas and Joel held their breath and waited for him to settle. The harness was on. "Okay, we're ready," whispered Joel. As the wind dropped, it was as if the forest was straining to listen to their plans. "Now get on your reindeer and fly away." "Papa, please come with us." "No, I'll slow you down." "Blitzen's strong and fast. You could be on the sleigh making sure that little Kip is okay." "You can't stay here, they'll kill you." "Tovia, yes." It was definitely Tovia, his long skinny frame moving as he lay in the dark, very clearly visible now. Nicholas had never seen his father this frightened before, even when faced with a bear. And the fear he saw in his father's face quickened Nicholas's heart. "All right," said Joel. "I'll get on the sleigh. We've got to go, quick." Nicholas climbed on Blitzen's back. Then he leant forward to whisper in the reindeer's ear. "Come on, boy, as fast as you can. Let's get out of here." Natovia was properly awake. He was kicking at the boots of the other men and urging them to wake up. "They're escaping!" Blitzen heaved towards a clear line between the trees, struggling as he switched from walk to trot. "Come on, Blitzen, you can do it, boy. Come on, it's Christmas Day. Use your magic!" Nicholas heard a strange, hushed whistle. To his horror, he saw an arrow speeding through the air. He ducked, saving his head by a fraction. Blitzen was having difficulty breaking into a gallop. The weight of the sleigh and the cage and the little Kip and Joel and Nicholas. A second arrow whooshed by. Blitzen gained speed, but not enough. The trees were too close together. He weaved dangerously through them, Nicholas holding on for dear life. Turned to see the sledge tilt to the left and nearly tipping Joel off. Nicholas could hardly think, his brain a chaos of trees and speed and fear. Arrows and stones were now flying through the air. And then the very worst thing of all happened. Nicholas heard a scream behind him, an agonising howl which tore through the night. He turned to see his father, who was standing at the very edge of the sleigh, with a piece of thin, feathered wood jutting out from his shoulder. Blood was already leaking onto his patchwork shirt. "Papa!" Nicholas cried as another arrow whistled by his ear. Then Nicholas felt Blitzen's weight pressing upwards. It was happening. But as they started to leave the ground, a rock from a catapult hit Blitzen's chest. Perhaps it was the shock or the pain, but he weakened momentarily. He tried to tilt back and lift higher as they went over the men's heads, but Nicholas could see that they were in trouble. They were going into the trees, not over them. His face whipped by the snowy branches and he choked on pine needles. As arrows continued to fly by, streaking black lines in the dark. "Come on, Blitzen," cried Nicholas, urging the reindeer on to defy gravity. But poor Blitzen was struggling. He crashed back to earth but kept galloping, trying to lift off again. "It's too heavy," moaned Joel in agony as his hand clutched his shoulder. Nicholas knew his father was right, but he noticed that the trees up ahead were thinning. "It'll be all right," shouted Nicholas. "Come on, Blitzen." Nicholas felt Blitzen's feet tread on nothing but air, a soft floating upwards, but still it was no good. His whole body was tight with effort, and the sleigh was dragging them down. Nicholas tried to use his own magic. Fear had turned his mind into a cyclone of thoughts, so he couldn't hold a wish for long before it flew away like paper in the wind. "You don't understand," shouted Joe. The ravine! The river! And then Nicholas understood. It wasn't just the trees that stopped ahead of them. It was the land, too. It disappeared into nothing, like a horizon that was too close and too low. They were only metres away from a deep, deep, dark drop towards the river. You won't be able to cross. The only way is to fly, shouted Joel. It's too heavy. But Nicholas wasn't giving in. With every nerve in his body, with every molecule inside him, he hoped and prayed and urged the magic, his own and Blitzen's, to work. Come on, Blitzen. Come on, boy. You can do it. Fly. The reindeer rose again into the air, but only slightly. They crashed into more branches, and Joel was holding tightly onto the cage now. Nicholas heard little Kip whimper in fear. Oh, no, said the elf. Oh, no. I'm weighing you down, said Joel. I'm going to jump. The words ripped at Nicholas like teeth. No, Papa, don't. He turned around, and Joel's face was full of another kind of pain now. The pain of farewell. No! I love you, Nicholas, he yelled. I want you to remember me for something good. No, Papa, it will be... They were right at the edge now, and Nicholas felt it before he saw it. The sudden lightning, the quickening of Blitzen's pace, as Joel let go of the cage and fell to the ground below. Nicholas's tears burst from his eyes. He saw his father curled up in the snow, getting smaller and smaller, and finally disappearing in the darkness, just as his mother had disappeared into the darkness of the well. Nicholas felt terrified as it dawned on him. He was all alone in the world now. Blitzen with a lighter load and determined to take his cargo to safety, soared high above the ravine, fast and strong and away into the sky, riding through the air. The sadness Nicholas felt was incredible. To lose someone you love is the very worst thing in the world. It creates an invisible hole that you feel you are falling down and will never end. People you love make the world real and solid, and when they suddenly go away forever, nothing feels solid anymore. He would never hear his father's voice again, or never hold his strong hands, never see him wear his red hat. And the tears on Nicholas's face froze as he flew through the cold air. It was the saddest birthday, the saddest Christmas ever. He clung to Blitzen's back, feeling his warmth, only occasionally looking back behind him to make sure the sleigh and the cage were still there. With his ear to the reindeer's fur, he could hear the blood pumping around Blitzen's body. It seemed to replace the sound of galloping. He'd been crying since his father jumped off the sleigh. Had he died as he'd fallen, or had Anders and Tovio and all the others reached him first? Either way, he feared the result was the same. He would never see his father again. He felt it, a howling emptiness inside his heart. Slowly, the sky became light. I'm sorry, said a small voice behind him. It's all my fault. Nicholas had hardly heard little Kip say a word except, oh no, until now. Don't be sorry, said Nicholas, wiping a tear from his eye. None of it is your fault. A little time went by. Thank you for saving me, came that small voice. Listen, I know you think my father was a bad human, and it was a bad thing he did. But there was good too. He was just weak. We had no money. Humans are complicated. Elves too, said little Kip. Nicholas stared into the whiteness of the snow clouds all around him. Even climbing through small chimneys or flying through the air was easier than believing in life. Yet, as Blitzen galloped on, Nicholas knew that he had to carry on and return little Kip to his home. He just had to. You are a friend, said little Kip. They flew over the mountains, and this time Nicholas could see Elfhelm straight away. The street of seven curves, the tower, the village, the wooden hills, the lake. By the time Blitzen had landed right in the centre of the reindeer field, a crowd had already gathered. Nicholas wasn't scared because nothing in the world could scare him now. He had lost his father. What terror could the world offer that was worse than that? Even after climbing off the reindeer, he saw the crowd part to make way for Father Vidal, who was marching towards them. He still didn't feel fear, just emptiness. "So, the son of Joel the woodcutter has returned," said Father Vidal. Nicholas nodded towards the wooden crate. "What's going on?" "I've brought little Kip back to Elfhelm," announced Nicholas, loud enough for everyone to hear. "It's true, Father Vidal," said a smiling white-whiskered elf walking towards them. It was Father Topo, closely followed by little Noosh. "Nicholas has saved little Kip. It's the news we've all been waiting for." "Yes," said Father Vidal, offering Nicholas a reluctant smile. "Yes, I suppose it is. But now the human must go back to the tower." The crowd roared in disagreement. "But it's Christmas Day. Let him be." Father Topo shook his head. "No, not this time. Enough of this goodwill, Father Topo. No more words out of you. The human must return to the tower. That is it. Final." The crowd of elves grew angrier, and a couple of them threw extra hard pieces of gingerbread, oh my, at Father Vidal's head. Father Topo looked stern for the first time in his life. "You will have an uprising on your hands. The human boy is a hero." And the elves started chanting, "Hero! Hero! Hero!" "You ungrateful elves," shouted Father Vidal at the top of his voice, which was very, very loud. "Don't you realise all I've done for you? How safe I've helped you become by ending goodwill and joy?" "I quite liked goodwill, come to think of it," said one elf. "And joy wasn't so bad either," said another. "And I miss spickle dancing." "Me too. And proper pay. 3 chocolate coins isn't enough to live on. And being nice to non-elves." And on it went, the list of complaints. And Father Vidal, as a democratically elected leader of Elfhelm, realised he had no choice. "All right," he said. "Before we decide what to do with the human boy, let us first take little Kip home." An almighty roar rose up through the crowd, and many began spickle dancing, illegally. Nicholas looked around and cried. But this time his tears had a little bit of happiness in them, the kind of happiness that can only be felt by being around joy and goodwill of elves. A boy called Christmas. Little Kip's parents were called Moodon and Loka. They were just humble workers, but with specialisms, so were wearing the blue tunics. Moodon was a gingerbread baker, and Loka was a toy maker, specialising in spinning tops, who had fallen on hard times recently, as elves had lost interest in playing. They lived in a cabin on the edge of the village and made of wood, but with gingerbread chairs and tables and cupboards not far from the wooded hills. Anyway, that's not important. What is important is that Nicholas had never seen anyone look as happy as Moodon and Loka when he brought little Kip to their doorstep. "Amazing! Oh, it's a miracle," said Loka, bursting into tears. "Thank you so much. This is the best Christmas present ever." "It is Nicholas you should be thanking," said Father Topo, pushing the boy forward. "Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you." Loka hugged Nicholas and hugged his knees tightly, causing him to fall over. "How can I ever repay you? I will give you some toys. I have lots that I have been making, spinning tops especially. Wait there. I'll bake you the best gingerbread," said Moodon, who had ginger hair and a ginger beard. Weird. He almost looked like he was made of gingerbread. Father Vidal couldn't help but frown at the sight of a human being thanked. Well, he is an escaped convict, so he should really be going back to the tower now. Huge tears began to cloud little Kip's sky-blue eyes. Nicholas remembered the cold, dark, tiny furnace room he had been locked inside and realised right then that however bleak life might be without his father, it would be even bleaker spent locked up in a tower. As you have seen, that would be a very unpopular decision, said Father Topu firmly. I know it's not my place, as I am not on the council, but I think it's this particular human is a hero for rescuing my son. A real Christmas hero, said Loka. And even Mother Riri agreed that Nicholas shouldn't go back to the tower. I think we need to rewrite some of our elf laws, she suggested. Father Vidor was not happy. He grumbled and he paced. A nearby clog detached itself from the clog rack and fell off and clunked on the floor. Everyone stared at the clog, and they knew it was because Father Vidal was in a bad mood. Father Vidal, said Mother Riri, appalled. I'm sorry, but he is a human. We know what humans can do. We can't soften our position on humans because of one child. Father Topu clicked his tongue thoughtfully. You do realise that this human will help you sell lots of newspapers? Father Vidal paused. Nicholas could see he was struggling because he knew this to be true. Eventually, in the quietest voice imaginable, a word crept out of the side of Father Vidal's mouth. Maybe. Father Topu placed a hand on Nicholas's shoulder, or tried to. It was too much of a stretch, so he patted his arm instead. So he can get a pardon? There was a very long pause. It was a pause far longer than these two sentences, but eventually the pause came to an end. Father Vidal nodded, the smallest nod that has ever been nodded by an elf or a human. Yes. Hooray! Said everyone who wasn't Father Vidal. I think we should throw a Christmas party to celebrate, said Mother Riri. Father Vidal tutted. We had a Christmas party 2 days ago. That was a terrible party, spluttered Mother Riri. Come on, he deserves one. I would be very honoured, said Nicholas, but I think tonight me and Blitzen would just like to rest. Loka arrived back in the room, holding 7 spinning tops, a snow globe, a cuddly bear and an art set. The spinning tops in particular looked beautiful. All of them were brightly coloured reds and greens and mainly hand-painted. They were the loveliest toys Nicholas had ever seen. It was too much to carry. 2 of the tops fell and spun on the floor. Father Topu took a biscuit from his pocket and nibbled it thoughtfully. Isn't it wonderful? Just the simple act of giving presents. Not really, said Father Vidal. Honestly, said Nicholas, as Loka tried to pick up the toys from the floor. Just one spinning top will be fine. Loka shook her head, causing her long plaits to sway from side to side as even more spinning tops dropped to the floor. No, you need more than one spinning top. Spinning tops are very important. They relax you. They take your mind off things. I just need to find something to put all your presents in. She looked around. Little Kip pointed at his father's stockings. Good idea, agreed Loka. Moodon, take off your stockings. What? They're the perfect size for all these spinning tops. Go on, take them off. You've got plenty of others. So Moodon took off his woolen stockings in front of everyone. Nicholas was surprised that his elf legs were quite hairy. Well, Moodon's were. Once they were off, Loka placed all the toys inside. See? The perfect size. Perhaps we should all use stockings to carry toys. There you go. Merry Christmas. And those stockings full of toys didn't make everything better. Nicholas felt a little happier, knowing he had made someone else happier. And then he said goodbye to Little Kip and headed out with Father Topu into the cold night where Blitzen waited outside, staring at him with loving eyes that sparkled like snow. The big decision. Blitzen settled back into the reindeer field with Donna and Dasher and Vixen and all the others. And over the next few weeks, Nicholas observed that the reindeer seemed to like Blitzen's naughty sense of humour. They were always laughing at him. Well, it was impossible to tell if the reindeer were really laughing, as reindeer's laughter is very hard to detect. But their eyes shone brighter whenever he was around. And Nicholas stayed in Father Topu's cabin. He stayed there for many weeks, ate the delicious gingerbread that Moodon made and enjoyed playing cards, each one hand-painted by Loka, with Little Noosh. Little Noosh, like all elves, was amazing at card games, but occasionally she would let him win. He mixed well and made friends with elves and was never snobby, regardless of the colour of their tunic. The sadness in him was strong. Though he tried to remember the good side of his father, it has always been there underneath, like the bright red beneath the dirt on his hat. Nicholas washed the hat and wore it, and he was determined for the good side to live on inside himself, and for him never to lose it. "I've been thinking," said Nicholas, after a month in Elfhelm. "It's time for me to go back to the human world." "Well," Father Topu said, "if that's what you want to do, then you should do it." And one day, he even got Blitzen to fly him to, now I can't say this very well, I apologise, Kristinakapunki. As he flew, he occasionally looked for his father, the way he had looked for him before. But of course, there was now no father to be found. They landed on the church roof and Nicholas climbed down the tower. He spent the day among the humans and he stared in the window of the toy shop at the elf dolls that looked far too square and simple to be elves. He saw the cuddly doll of King Frederick and he saw a boy walking out with a wooden reindeer. He remembered that craving inside him when he used to gaze in with his dad to have the toys that other children had. Now all he did was crave to be by his father's side. The plan had been to go back to the cottage, but there was no way. Why choose to live with a nasty aunt when you could live in a place of joy and magic? Why live in a place so full of reminders of a past that can't be brought back? So he made the decision he was going to live with the elves forever. But as Nicholas kept banging his head on the roof beams of Father Topu's cabin, it was decided that he should have a home of his own. So the elves built him a pine wood house with some gingerbread and candy cane furniture. The only thing Nicholas had been certain to ask the architects was for a view of the reindeer field. So they built the house right on the edge of the snow-covered grass, meaning that from all the south-facing windows he could see Blitzen at any time. Sometimes, when Blitzen was in a good mood, he would fly circuits around Nicholas's house, galloping fast through the air, all past the upstairs windows. Occasionally, some of the other reindeer joined in, Prancer and Comet usually, sometimes Dancer though, never Donner. She was far too sensible. Nicholas felt lucky. He thought of Aunt Carlotta and sleeping out in the cold. There were many worse ways to live as an 11-year-old boy than surrounded by magic and elves and reindeer. When he was 12, Nicholas was elected to the Elf Council after being nominated for election by Father Topu. Even Father Vidal supported the idea, and he knew that it would make another good front page for the Daily Snow, particularly because Nicholas was the youngest person, or elf, that had ever been honoured in this way. Then, as Father Vidal stepped down as elf leader to return to his media work, there was another election for the leadership of Elfhelm. Nicholas won the election by 7,983 votes, with only one elf voting against the idea. So Nicholas was called Father Nicholas, which struck Nicholas as funny, as he was only 12 and clearly not a father. But that was the custom in Elfhelm. Mother Vidal, Father Vidal, much cheerier younger sister, suggested he should have an elf name, as Nicholas sounded a bit too like Nicholas, a very disgusting troll of cheese. Oh, disgusting troll cheese, sorry. Ooh. Yes, agreed Mother Riri. I don't want to be reminded of mouldy cheese every time I say your name. Oh, yes, said Mother Breer, the nervous belt maker who had recently been appointed as a council member, following a sympathy vote in her favour after she had been burgled by a gang of pixies. That is true, Nicholas. Is a very bad word. It is nearly as bad as stinky mud fungal. Or impossible. We must think of something else. At which point, Father Topu interrupted. How about we ask Nicholas? There was only one name that came to mind. Christmas, said Nicholas. What about Christmas? Grumbled Father Vidal. 7 months away. No. I mean, why don't you call me Christmas? Father Christmas. All the elves sitting in the council room nodded. "Why that name?" asked Father Topu, toying with a biscuit. "My mum and dad used to call me it when I was a little boy, because I was born on Christmas Day. It was a nickname." "Father Christmas," said Father Vidal, suspiciously. "Doesn't sound very memorable." "I like it," said Father Topu. He munched on his biscuit, getting crumbs in his moustache. "I mean, you brought little Kip back on Christmas." "It fits, Father Christmas." "Christmas is a time of giving," said Mother Riri, "and you yourself were a gift, a human gift." Nicholas felt memories coming flooding back, and a tear rolled down his cheek. Father Christmas. He remembered those early Christmases when his parents had both been alive and they had gone to sing carols in the town square. He remembered the joy of that later Christmas when his father had shown him the sleigh he had been building and hiding in the forest. Even the turnip doll had been special at the time. He smiled, wiping away that happy tear, and sounded the name over in his mind. "I think Father Christmas is perfect." "Hooray!" said Father Topu, swallowing the last of his biscuit. "This calls for gingerbread." A last visit to Aunt Carlotta. The first thing Father Christmas did was to undo all the things Father Vidal had done. "Elves should be free to wear whatever tunic they like," he said. "No green tunics and blue tunics and all that. Oh, and they can sit and at whichever table they choose. And spickle dancing should be encouraged. And singing. It can be joyful again. And food can be enjoyed." The elves of the Elf Council all agreed. "And there should be joy and goodwill." "Joy and goodwill," said Mother Riri. "Really? That's a bit controversial." "Yes, maybe it is, but elves used to be happy, and they could be happy again." And then came a cry of joy and goodwill, and everyone was saying it. Well, not everyone. Not solemn-faced Father Vidal, for instance, but he even managed to offer a small smile. Yep, there was no mistaking it. The human boy had brought happiness back to Elfhelm, and happiness was here to stay. Oh dear, let me see if I... Spickle dancing. Yeah, well, let's have a look. Apparently, you have to throw your drink in someone's face. You need a barrel, and then you hit it. So that's... I'll have to look into that. That evening, Nicholas climbed onto Blitzen's back and went on one last voyage. He wanted to see the house he had left behind, so he flew in a straight line as fast and quick as he could, back to the cottage where he had grown up. They landed next to the well, which his mother had fallen into, and he sat on a tree stump that had been chopped by his father. He walked back to the cottage, which still smelt faintly of rotten turnip, and saw that Aunt Carlotta wasn't there. He sat inside and breathed it in, knowing that it would probably be the last time he would come here. Later, flying back, they saw Aunt Carlotta walking to town. As they flew over her head, she looked up, and Nicholas thought that it would help her a great deal in her life if she could believe in magic. So he shouted at her from a great height. "Aunt Carlotta, it's me, flying on a reindeer. I'm all right, but I won't come home again." Aunt Carlotta looked up just in time to see Nicholas waving at her in the sky on the back of a brown reindeer, and to see something brown streaking fast towards her. You see, while Nicholas wanted Aunt Carlotta to believe in magic, Blitzen had another idea. Oh dear. He was bang on target too. The reindeer dung landed squarely on her head and covered her best town clothes. "You rotten beast!" she screamed at the sky, clawing the stinking dark stuff off her face. But by then, Blitzen and Nicholas had disappeared into the clouds. Oh dear. How Father Christmas spent the next 10 years. Number 1. Eating gingerbread. Having spent his first 11 years knowing only mushroom soup, he spent the next 10 years eating the kind of food elves eat. Not only gingerbread, but cloudberry jam, blueberry buns, bilberry pie, sweet plum soup, chocolate jelly sweets, and all the major elf food groups. There was always food to eat at any time of day. Number two, growing. He had grown very tall, double the height of the tallest elf, which it was Father Vidal. Number three, talking to reindeer. He began to realise that reindeer have their own language. It wasn't a language used in their mouths, but it was a language. He liked nothing more than to go out and talk to them. They talked about the weather a lot. Had 17,563 words for moss, but only one for grass. Believed antlers explained the universe. Loved flying and thought humans were just elves that had gone wrong. Prancer was the most talkative and always told jokes. Donna was always full of compliments and Cupid spoke of love. Vixen was incredibly gloomy and liked asking deep questions, as, if a tree falls in the forest and no one sees it, does it really fall? Comet made no sense whatsoever and Blitzen was always pretty quiet. But Nicholas liked his company best of all. Number four, working on his image. Obviously Nicholas needed special clothes, as there wasn't an elf outfit in existence that he could fit into. So Mother Breer made his belts black leather with a fancy silver buckle. And an elf called Shoehorn, yes really, made his boots. And the village tailor, Father Lupin, made his clothes, which were the brightest red. Number five, wearing a hat. His father's hat, to be precise, clean and fresh and alive with the colour again. Number six, being jolly. Every day, not only did he wear his red and white outfit, complete with shiny black belt and boots, but he was determined to be as jolly as he could be. Because the easiest way to make other people happy was to be happy yourself, or at least to act as if you were. That was how his mother had done it, and even his father too, once upon a time. Number seven, writing. He wrote the three best-selling books of the decade in Elfhelm, selling over 27 copies each. How to Be Jolly, The Father Christmas Guide to Happiness, Sleighcraft for Dummies, and The Reindeer Whisperer. Number eight, working. He worked hard as leader of the Elf Council. He opened nurseries and play parks, attending boring meetings. He brokered a peace deal with the trolls and turned Elfhelm into a happy place of toys and speckle dancing once more. Number nine, remembering. He often thought of his father, and he also thought of the human world he had left behind, and felt sad that his fellow humans couldn't share the wonders of Elfhelm. He began to think. Gradually, over the years, about whether to take some of the goodness here, some of the magic, and spread it around the human world. And number 10, making friends. Nicholas had never had friends before, and now he had 7,983 friends. They were mainly elves, but that was okay, because elves were the best kind of friends to have. Naughty and nice. Yes, Nicholas made lots of fantastic friends among the elves, and was something of a role model for Little Kip and Little Noosh, who now weren't so little, and were called just Kip and Noosh. "Why do you think some humans are naughty?" Kip asked him one day, while Nicholas took him and Noosh out for a sleighcraft lesson. They were all together on the sleigh, which now had a comfy seat made by Father Topu. Kip was handsome for an elf, with raven black hair and a dimple in his chin, while Noosh still had a happy wildness to her. She also always reminded Nicholas of a warm fire made into an elf. They were somewhere over Norway, even though it was the middle of the day. It was always safe to fly over Norway, as there were still only eight people living there. Noosh was holding the reins, staring ahead. As Blitzen and Donna and all the other reindeer powered through the air, "Most humans are just a mixture of good things and some bad things," said Nicholas. "Like reindeer," said Noosh. "I suppose so." "But with reindeer, it's easy," said Kip, pulling out a sheet of crumpled paper from his pocket. He handed it to Nicholas. Kip had drawn a line down the middle, and on one side put naughty, and on the other side put nice. "Poor Vixen," said Nicholas, seeing she was the only reindeer in the naughty list. "Well, she bit Prancer the other day." "Did she? But Prancer was on the list last week. Then I'm told I'd give him a biscuit if he was good. Nicholas thought about this for a little while, but as the thought soon melted away like snow in the sun. Noosh angled the sleigh carefully to avoid an approaching rain cloud. She was the best sleigh rider in Elfhelm now, no doubt about it. Why don't you give them some magic? The humans, I mean, said Noosh. Ho, ho, Noosh, it's not that easy. Come on, we better get back to Elfhelm. Your grandfather will be waiting for you. Your parents too. Kip, all these reindeer will be getting hungry. I'm 22 next week, Nicholas, told Father Topu a few minutes after they had landed. They were feeding the reindeer while Noosh and Kip practiced their spickle dance moves. Father Topu looked at Nicholas. He had quite a way to look now, too, because Nicholas was now over 6 feet tall. He was taller than his father had been. Yes, Nicholas was a tall, strong, smiling, handsome human, who, despite the smile, always wore a slight frown, as though he was permanently confused about something, a mystery he hadn't quite solved. Yes, I know, said Father Topu, as a breeze tickled his whiskers. Do you think that will be the age I find out who I'm meant to be? Maybe, but you'll know when you find yourself, because then you'll stop aging. Nicholas knew this. He knew that anyone with elf magic inside them never grew old. Than the age when they were truly happy with themselves. It took you 99 years, didn't it? Father Topu sighed. Yes, that's quite unusual. He gave Vixen a biscuit. There you go, you grumpy thing. But don't think about it. Look at Blitzen. Look at his antlers. They haven't changed in 2 years. He's found his perfect age without even thinking about it. Nicholas looked back towards the main path that led towards the streets of the Seven Curves. He looked at the giant clog hanging outside the clogmakers and the little spinning top painted onto the sign outside the toy makers. He saw Min Min at her newspaper stall selling the daily snow. Every elf had a purpose. They had turned back to the field, the reindeer and the oval lake, less like a mirror today as the water rippled in the breeze. I need to do something. Something big. Something good. There's no point being a leader of elves unless I lead them somewhere. Well, said Father Topu softly, whatever you decide to do, you know all of us will be behind you. Everyone loves you. Everyone is the happiest they have been since Mother Ivy's rule a long time ago. Even Father Vidal quite likes you these days. Nicholas laughed out loud. Can't quite believe that. Oh, yes, said Father Topu. The goodness has won him in. And the goodness is spreading far and wide. Beyond the village. Have you heard about the pixies? They don't grow hulip anymore. And they have no burglaries since since Mother Breer has her belt stolen. The tower's been empty for a year now, and the trolls don't bother us anymore. I think that's because they know you live here, and the story got out, Father Christmas troll killer. Nicholas nodded, guiltily remembered that day in the tower. You'll find something, and it will be something good. They look up to you, we all do, and not just because you're twice as tall as us. Nicholas and Blitzen found this very funny. Ho, 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 he said, as he gave the reindeer a carrot. Then he thought of something. Where can I get a telescope? Oh, here's the list. There we go. How to be jolly even when times are bad. Number one, eat more gingerbread, chocolate, jam and cake. Number two, say the word Christmas. Number three, give someone a present, like a toy or a book or a kind word or a big hug. Number four, laugh even if there is nothing to laugh about, especially then. Number five, think of a happy memory or a happy future. Number six, wear something red. Number seven, believe. This is an extract from How to Be Jolly, The Father Christmas Guide to Happiness. Father Christmas seeks the truth. The next day, Nicholas headed into the wooded hills with a present. Whenever he saw anyone he hadn't seen for a while, he took a present. There was nothing that made him feel better than the simple act of giving. And today, the present he was holding was a telescope. that had been made by Picklewick the elf, who had once shouted at him when he was up on the roof. He still felt bad about that, no matter how many times Nicholas told him not to. Anyway, Father Topu had been right. There were no Hewlett plants growing on the hills anymore. There were still some rough patches of earth that hadn't been replanted, but elsewhere there were just cloudberries and plum trees. He walked until he reached a yellow cottage with a thatched roof. It was very, very small. He knocked on the door and waited. Soon, a long-haired, angel-faced pixie appeared. "Hello, Truth Pixie," he said. The creature smiled a wide pixie smile. "Hello, Nicholas," she said. "Or should I call you Father Christmas? Or should I say Santa Claus?" "Santa Claus?" said Nicholas. "What does that mean?" The pixie giggled. "Oh, it's just the name the pixies have for you. The literal translation is strange man with a big belly." "Charming." He held out the telescope. "This is for you. I thought you might like it, especially as you've such a good view around here." Nicholas felt a tingle of joy as he watched the Truth Pixie's eyes light up. "A magic viewing stick. How did you know I wanted one of those?" "Just a guess." The pixie put her eye to the telescope and looked over Elfhelm. "Wow! Everything is the same but bigger." And then she turned it around and made everything look smaller. "Ha! Look at you, little Father Christmas, the pixie." "Anyway, come in, come in." Nicholas squeezed into the tiny house, a yellow room full of pretty pixie plates hanging on the walls. He sat on a little wooden stool and had to keep his head bent low. The room was warm and smelt nice, sugar and cinnamon, and maybe a faint tang of cheese. The pixie smiled. "What are you smiling about?" "I think I'm still a bit in love with you after you saved my life that time." Her face was redeeming. She didn't want to say this, but when you're a truth pixie, you can't help it. "I mean, I know it couldn't work out between us. A pixie and a human, you're far too tall. Your strange round ears would give me nightmares." She sighed and stared down at a yellow tiled floor. "Oh, I really wish I hadn't said that." "That's okay. I'm sure there are plenty of nice pixies out there." No, pixies are surprisingly dull. "But the truth is, I like being on my own." Nicholas nodded. "Me too." There was a bit of an awkward silence. Not quite a silence, as there was a little scrabbling, munching noise. A sound Nicholas recognised, but couldn't work out where from. "I've read about you in the Daily Snow all the time. You seem to be quite the celebrity." "Yes," said Nicholas through the tiny window at one of the nicest views of Elfhelm. He was looking was a giant mountain in the distance. He looked over at the disused tower. Then he saw a frail old mouse nibbling on stinky chunk of chol cheese. That was the sound he had heard. It couldn't be. But yes, it was. It was Mika. "Mika, is that really you?" Mika turned his head and looked at Nicholas for a moment. "Mika, it's you. How wonderful." "Actually, his name is Glump," said the Truth Pixie. "I found him waiting in my house after I was released from the tower. He always likes the food I give him, especially the troll cheese." "Is a bit better than turnip, eh?" Nicholas asked the mouse. "Cheese," said Mika. "Cheese is real. I have cheese." As Nicholas looked at the mouse, he thought back to his childhood over 10 years and a whole country away. He thought of his father and his mother and Aunt Carlotta. It was strange seeing someone, even a mouse, who had shared the same room as him, open the door to 100 memories. But Mika didn't seem emotional and kept nibbling his cheese. "I don't understand," said the Truth Pixie. Nicholas was about to tell her that Mika was actually an old friend, but watching the rodent munching happily on cheese, he decided to keep this information to himself. Mika was clearly contented in his woodland home. "It doesn't matter. I hear you pixies aren't being violent anymore." "Oh," said the Truth Pixie. "We still love the idea of exploding heads. But you know what? After it happens, you feel empty inside. And anyway, I've invented this." She went over to a drawer and pulled something out. It was a bright red kind of tube made out of thick paper. "Hold that end and pull," she said, holding the other end. They pulled and there was a mighty bang. Mika dropped the cheese, then picked it up again in his tiny claws. The truth pixie squealed with delight. Don't you just love it? Wow, wasn't expecting that. I'm calling them crackers. You can put little presents inside. And less to clear up than with all that exploding troll head stuff. Anyway, why are you here? I came to see you because I need to talk to someone who can be honest with me. I can talk to the elves, but they're so busy being kind that they're not always so good at being truthful. But you are. The tiny creature nodded. Truth is what I do. Nicholas hesitated. He felt slightly embarrassed. He was so big and tall compared to a mouse and a pixie, yet the mouse and the pixie knew exactly who and what they were. They had found their place in the world. The thing is, I am a human. Well, sort of. But I have magical abilities too. I am Nicholas, but I am now also Father Christmas. I am very in between. But it's difficult. I am told that I just need to work out what I want to do. The elves say I do good, but what good do I do? You set up Goodwill Day in honour of Mother Ivy. You've allowed spickle dancing. You've given all the elves more chocolate money. You've opened the new elf nursery and the play park and the clog museum and turned the prison back into the welcome tower. Your books are still doing well. Not that I really like elf help nonsense. You pass your sleigh craft exam and you teach young elves how to fly sleighs. Everyone passes their sleigh craft exam. And yes, I do a bit of teaching, but I don't know that it's my destiny. The truth pixie tried to think. You saved little Kip? 10 years ago. Yes, perhaps you are living on past glories just a little bit, said the truth pixie solemnly. But the elves do admire you. I know they respect me, but they shouldn't. They need a purpose, a true purpose. I haven't given them that. The truth pixie thought about this and waited for the truth to come. This took a moment or two. 3 moments, in fact. Then she said it. Sometimes, she said, as her eyes shone wide and bright, people look up to people not for who they have been, but for what they could become. For what they know they could be. They see in you something special. Mika had finished his cheese now and scuttled over to the end of the table. He jumped onto Nicholas's lap. Oh, he likes you, said the truth pixie. That's rare. He's normally quite picky. He's looking up to you, just like the elves do. I do like you, said Mika, in his quiet mouse language. Even though you are not a dairy product, I like you. Everyone looks up to you. As the truth pixie spoke, Nicholas felt something stir inside him. That warm, sweet feeling. The feeling of magic and hope and kindness. That was the very best feeling in the world. It told him once again what he had known for 10 years. Nothing was impossible. But even better than that, he now had a sense that he was in Elfhelm for a reason. He might never be able to be a true elf, but he was here and now, like everything in life, there was a purpose at work. You have the power to do good, and you know it. He did know he had the power to do good, and he would find a way to do it. A way to unite the Nicholas side of himself and the Father Christmas side. He would unite the human bits with the magical bits, and maybe one day he could change not just Elfhelm, but the lives of humans too. The truth pixie screwed up her nose. Her triangular little face was lost in thought. Then from out of nowhere, she shouted a word into the air. Giving! What? Giving is what makes you happy. I saw your face when you gave me the viewing stick. It was still a big, strange human face, but it was happy. Nicholas smiled and rubbed his chin. Giving. Yes, giving. Thank you, Truth Pixie. I owe you the whole world. The Truth Pixie smiled some more. This humble cottage and these wooded hills are enough for me. Then Mika crawled across Nicholas's knee and wanted to jump on the floor. So Nicholas held out his hand for the mouse to climb on and gently lowered him to the ground. Cheese is better than turnip, isn't it? Said Nicholas. Most certainly is, said Mika. And Nicholas seemed to understand. Nicholas got off the tiny chair and crouched his way out of the tiny house. The truth pixie thought of something as Nicholas made his way down the hill towards Elfhelm. Oh, and you should grow a beard. It would really suit you. That's weird, isn't it? surprisingly. And now we come to 40 years later. Father Christmas reveals all in the Daily Snow, Elfhelm's favourite newspaper. Exclusive, Father Christmas reveals his new look. Father Christmas was spotted at Reindeer Field this week with a beard. Speaking to the Daily Snow's political correspondent, Mother Jingle, Father Christmas commented, "Yes, it's true. This is a beard and it's on my face. But I really want to talk to you about the need for more goodwill." And so there you have it. Father Christmas's beard is real. See page 33 to 47 for advice on how to get the Father Christmas look. The magic of giving. It takes some people a long time to work out exactly what they are here for. In Nicholas's case, it took him another 40 years. He was now 62 years old. He had not only kept his beard, as a truth pixie suggested, but he had been leader of the Elf Council for a very long time. In that time, he had persevered and expanded happiness in Elfhelm. He had started a weekly spickle dance with singing tomtigubs in the village hall, given free toys to every newborn elf, and converted the tower into a toy workshop, established a university of advanced toy making, expanded the school of sleighcraft, and set up a pixie elf alliance, signed a peace treaty with the trolls, and invented the mince pie, and sherry, and gingerbread men, and had raised the elf minimum wage to 500 chocolate coins a week. But he still felt he needed to do more. He knew he needed to do more because he was still getting older by the day. Most elves, with the exception of Father Topu and a few others, had stopped aging around 40, and it was getting a bit silly. He was taking so long to find his purpose. He loved helping the elves, but it was time to help the people that part of him he still belonged to. The people he had left behind in the world, one that was too full, often full of loss and pain and sadness. He could sense them. He would lie awake in bed at night and hear their voices in his head. He could feel the whole world in there, the good and the bad, the naughty and the nice. One Sunday night in spring, when there was no moon, he took Blitzen from the field and flew beyond the mountain. There was no better feeling than flying through the sky in the back of a reindeer. Even after a lifetime of doing so, Nicholas was now so comfortable with the name Father Christmas, he called himself Father Christmas, loved the magical feeling of zooming through the sky. They kept flying right across Finland, across the forest where he last saw his father, searching for him the way he always searched for him, whenever he flew. It was foolish. His father had died long ago, but it was an old habit. They flew into the southern Denmark over towns and cities and small fishing ports of the Helsinki, where trawlers and other boats waited for the fishermen who would take them out onto the rough seas again. Father Christmas desperately wanted to speak to one of his own kind, but he had long vowed to the elves that he would keep their secret. He knew they were right. Humans probably still couldn't be trusted to know about elves and their magic, but that was only because human lives could be so hard. On and on they flew over the kingdom of Hanover and the Netherlands and France. The lands below were dark, but with brief bursts of light from the fires and the gas street lamps that glimmered in the cities below. As Father Christmas finally asked Blitzen to head home, he thought of all human life, and certainly the life he remembered, was like this landscape, dark with occasional bursts of light. As he flew back north under the moonless sky, he realised, although he might not have been able to live with the humans again, the question still bothered him: how could he make their lives better, happier? The following day he asked the very same question in the meeting of the Elf Council. "We need to find a way to spread as much happiness as possible," he announced. Father Vidal arrived a bit late, clutching a stack of presents. "Happy birthday, Father Vidal," said Father Christmas. They all sang happy birthday when Father Vidal was seated. He turned and smiled at his good friend Father Christmas and wished he could turn back time and change that day he had put him in prison. "But everyone is happy," said Mother Noosh, who was now a successful journalist as the Daily Snow's chief reindeer correspondent. "Everyone here is still happy," corrected Father Christmas, "but I want to spread that happiness beyond the mountains." There was a collective gasp from everyone, which wasn't many, as there was cake-eating competition going on downstairs in the village hall. Beyond the mountain? Asked Father Topu. But it's too dangerous. Everything is perfect here. If we let all the humans know we are here, it would be chaos. No offence, Father Christmas. Father Christmas nodded thoughtfully and scratched his beard, which was now as white as Father Topu's whiskers. Father Topu always had a point, and this was no exception. I agree, Father Topu, I agree. But what if we did something that gave just a little bit of magic? Something that could brighten their lives. But what? Asked Father Vidal, who was opening a birthday present. A cuddly toy reindeer, he squealed with joy. It looks just like Blitzen. Thank you, Father Christmas. A pleasure, said Father Christmas. And Father Christmas watched the joy on Father Vidal's face and thought, as he often did, about the magic of giving. He thought of the day he had been given the sledge and the time a few years later when he had been given the turnip doll. Even though a sleigh is significantly better than a turnip, the feeling of receiving both had been the same. The truth pixie had been right. Giving was what he was good at. And then that night, at around midnight, it came to him. It was the biggest and craziest idea he had ever had in his life. The idea would involve a lot of things. First of all, a lot of hard work. But elves loved work, if it was fun. So he would make sure it was fun. It had to be fun, because if they weren't having fun, then it would go badly wrong. He would convert the tower from merely being a toy workshop to being the greatest toy workshop imaginable. The plan would also involve reindeer. Yes, all of the reindeer would be needed. He would need Blitzen to lead the way because no one was as good in the air as Blitzen. He was not only strong and quick, but he also had determination. He would never leave the journey half finished, just as Nicholas would never leave a mountain half climbed. As well as Blitzen, he would need Donna at the front to help with navigation. Or maybe that new reindeer Mother Noosh found wandering the wooded hills, the one with the strange red nose. And they'd need a good sleigh. They'd need the best sleigh that they had ever been, in fact. He'd need to recruit the best sleigh makers. He would need it to be strong and streamlined and silent in the air. But there was still a problem. He paced his bedroom, munching on chocolate. He looked out the window past Blitzen and the other eight reindeer asleep in the dark, over to the village hall. He looked at the new clock face. 15 minutes had gone by since he'd had his first idea. Time moved so quickly. He needed to do something about that, about time. How could he travel to every single child in the world in a single night? It was impossible. But Father Topu's words from long ago came back to him. An impossibility is just a possibility that you do not understand. He looked to the sky and saw a comet's fiery trail as it made its path between the stars before fading away into the night like a dream. A shooting star, he said to himself, remembering the one he'd seen with Mika all those years ago. I do believe in magic, Mika, he said. Imagining the long-gone mouse was still there with him, just as you believed in cheese. And where there was magic, there was always a way. And this time he knew he would find it. He stayed up all night thinking about it, and then he stopped thinking about it and started believing in it. He believed it so completely that it was already real. There was no use trying to think of a way, because it was impossible, and the only way you could make something impossible real wasn't through logic or sensible thinking. No, it was to believe it could be done. Belief was the method. You could stop time, expand chimneys, even travel the world in a single night with the right magic and belief inside you. And it was going to happen at Christmas. And that moment he knew. He felt a warm glow. It started in his tummy and spread through his whole body. It was the feeling that comes when you find out who you really are and who you know you will be. And in finding himself, he had stopped growing right there. The way you stop when you reach a destination after a long journey, or after reaching the last page in a book when the story is complete and stays that way forever. And so he knew that he, the man called Christmas, who really still felt as young as ever at 62. A 62-year-old boy called Christmas wouldn't age another day. He picked up his father's old red hat and placed it to his face and was sure he could smell the scent of pines from the old forest where his father had spent every day chopping down so many trees. He put the hat on his head and then he heard the distant sound of voices coming from the village hall. Of course, it was Monday, dance night. He opened his window wide and saw hundreds of happy elves walking back to their homes. He felt such a joyous spirit inside him, he leant out of the window and shouted as loud as he could, "Merry Christmas to all, and all a good night." And everyone looked up at him without question and said, "Merry Christmas." And everyone, including Father Christmas, laughed. And so it was that he closed the window and finished his chocolate and went to bed. He closed his eyes and smiled with joy, thinking of all of the magic and all of the wonder he would share next Christmas. Now this is another episode of the Daily Snow. You can bake a cake like a pixie, it says. Father Christmas's big gamble. After months of intense preparation, Father Christmas reported today at the toy workshop that plans were going well. "Everything is on track," he told the Daily Snow's political correspondent, Mother Jingle. "We had a little crisis earlier in the month with missing jigsaw pieces, but that has now been resolved." The first child to wake up. The very first child to wake up on Christmas morning was an 8-year-old girl called Amelia, who lived in a small house on the outskirts of London in the grey and rainy country known as England. She opened her eyes and stretched. She heard her mother coughing through the wall, and she saw something in the darkness of her room, an unmoving shape at the end of her bed. The sight made her curious, so she sat up, and there was a stocking bulging with parcels. She unwrapped the first parcel, her heart racing. "Impossible," she said, opening it up. It was a little wooden horse, exactly what she had always wanted. She opened the next present, a spinning top, perfectly hand-painted with the most lively pattern of zigzags. Something else, a little orange. She'd never seen an orange before, and money made out of chocolate. She noticed a piece of cream writing paper folded up at the bottom of the stocking, and she began to read. "Dear Amelia, I am pleased to tell you that you have been a good girl this year. I hope you enjoy the presents the elves made them especially for you. My name is Father Christmas. When I was your age, I was called Nicholas. There will be a lot of people in your life who tell you to grow up or to insist that you stop believing in magic. Do not listen to these people. There is magic in this world, and me and the elves and some fine flying reindeer will prove it to you. And all the children of the world, every Christmas morning when you find a stocking full of presents, now go and spread the word. Merry Christmas. Yours, Father Christmas." And that's the end. What a cool book. Wow. Thanks, everyone.